listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support. You know, I know not everyone feels this way, but when I get a year that I get gifted with not one, but two DePew, I feel like it's been a good year. God is smiling on me and my weird, twisted, absurdist little Francophile heart. Yes, Quentin DePew, the man who launched onto the scene, at least here, with his film about a sentient rubber tire that was trying to kill people called Rubber several years back that I know I saw at Fantastic Fest, because where else would you watch a movie as crazy as that? But then continued on his career with any number of extremely odd movies in his strange, absurdist universe that he exists in, all of which sort of border on various types of genres. We just reviewed one recently, and I loved it, and I was really excited. Oh, here's another one, which I guess technically came out before that one in Europe, but what difference does it make? It's not like he's got a running series, or despite my pleas to the contrary, there's no yet Quentin DePew cinematic universe. I kind of wish there was. But I got to ask you, I got here with Robert, who I know for a fact has seen a DePew film because I've sat next to him, I think, in a theater watching one.
Hello, everybody.
And then Brad, who I don't know if you've even seen one of his movies before this.
No, just the one, this one.
Très bien.
He picked the most normal Quentin DePew film we've yet had. And yet I bet you watched this and went, this is fucked up, man.
Well, I gotta say, I didn't quite get a grasp on what I was supposed to even grasp in this. But I loved the design of the puppet.
All his films are kind of dream logic-y. It's hard to say. It's like, I always picture it more like if any given Monty Python sketch was just someone's entire reality and it kept going, where it's not even planned, there's no punchline, that type of absurdity, except that's just how existence is any given Quentin DePew film. I'm not sure they have a point. I have yet to detect a point, but they sure are pleasurable to watch once you're kind of used to what he has to offer. And we're talking about his latest, Mandibles. So, of course, as we already insinuated, he is a French-Belgian director. It stars David Marseille and Grégoire Ludig, who are apparently part of a successful comedy troupe in France, but they play Jean-Gab and Manu. They're like Dumb and Dumber, kind of. You know, they're like Harry and Lloyd, but French. Manu, when we meet him, he is lying in a sleeping bag on the beach. Guy's like, hey, the water, you're going to get wet. The water's washing up. He's like, ah, it must have rolled over here. So he's like, look, I'll pay you, get a car. You have to go pick up the suitcase, put it in the trunk. You absolutely can't look at it at all. And then deliver it to this place. And the guy will give you 500, well, euros. And he's like, yeah, I can do that. No problem. Along the way, he goes and picks up his buddy. Jean Gab is working at a gas station. They're like, oh, shit, we need to check the trunk because we've got to make sure there's room in the trunk. So they open up the trunk and it's full with a dog-sized fly, like a house fly, but the size of, like, you know, I don't know, like a Cocker Spaniel or something. A big motherfucking fly. They don't get that. They weren't even that big in Jurassic Park. And they are not shocked in the slightest. They're like, oh, wow, dude, this is an opportunity to make some money. Like, it doesn't even, they're not even taken aback by a giant fly in the trunk. They're like, hey, I got an idea, says Jean Gab. He's like, what if we trained this fly, like, to retrieve things, and then we can pull off elaborate robbery heists using the fly, which is very much Quentin Depew logic. So they tape up its wings and they take it with them and they're like, we're going to train this thing. And they went through a series of really bizarre little encounters with people. And be clear, both these guys, they're not good guys. They're both straight up criminals. Just no morals or sense of ethics whatsoever. They're just like, oh, here's an opportunity. They're not setting out to be murderous or anything. They're like with Harry and Lloyd, if they were like, well, that guy's in my way, so I'm going to knock him out and steal his shit because I want to. They end up in a house because one of them gets mistaken for someone that they went to high school with. This girl, Cecile, played by India Hare, is like, don't you remember me? He's like, and they're like, why don't you come stay at our house? We are vacationing in this house just up the street from here. We'll take you up there and hang out. So they're like, yeah, this sounds great. They're all like, yes, you're this person. They're like, yeah, sure. Can I have some more booze and food and swim in your pool? Anyway. A series of bizarre events happen. That's as close as I can get to describing a plot. There is a punchline to this movie, which is rare for his films. There is a total wah, 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 wah moment is like the last shot of the film. That's just beautiful. It plays like it's almost a crime film, but it's not.
I'm dying to hear from Bradley, but I will say up front, one thing I know that people have said and will say is this is the most accessible of his films. And I think what he just nails in the beginning with the sunshine and the campy popish tune from probably the 50s or whatever is he's great at, hey man, look at this movie. You've seen movies before. And then like slowly you realize, well, I guess, you know, maybe he's not really worried about plot, or maybe he's not really worried about the constraints of what you usually see happen to people when they do this type of thing on film. This is a zag where people zig all day long, which at some point I guess is kind of his point, because there's some wild takes on here on, do bad guys get away with everything? Do good people really make out better for being better? Like, it's just kind of this weird chaotic look on these hapless dudes, man.
Yeah, he might be trying to say that, or he might not be at all. I don't know. You don't watch these for deep meaning. You watch for sure. Them as this weird light abstract comedy that really reminds me of The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeois or something like that, that came out way back in the 60s, of that sort of absurdist surrealism. That sort of comedy, the tonalness of it tends to be very timely. It's not evergreen. So I go back and watch those old films and I'm like, it's hard to get into these, man. But basically Depew's doing the exact same thing. It just feels more modern and therefore accessible. So I'm like, oh, I like this. It's lightly funny. And one thing it definitely does is keep you guessing.
Well, it's also only an hour and 17 minutes. I love creature features. This fly is amazing. If I saw a giant fly in a trunk, I'd probably scream, run, and be like, oh, I don't know what I saw. Maybe a dog, but just don't go near the car. And I love how these gentlemen, like, there's a giant fly in the trunk. Live, eh? And the lying I love so much in this, because for decades, Catch Me If You Can is one of my favorite films, by the way.
Oh, yeah, me too.
But for decades, Hollywood films have tried to convince us liars are smart, liars are conniving, they're 10 steps ahead. No, they just got no shame. So when she's like, don't I know you for knife school? He's like, sure, yeah. And even when he's caught in these lies, he's so quick to have an answer for it, just right off the tip of his tongue. Yeah, that's what happened. And I'm like, this guy's a shameless piece of crap. I like this guy. As a protagonist, I don't think you should lie to people.
I've actually used to hang out with people a lot like these guys when I was in high school and college. And yeah, those friendships never end up well.
Yeah.
Because what were you thinking? You're like the frog that let the scorpion cross the river on its back.
I like that the age that the two guys are too, because they remind me, Chris, you said Harry and Lloyd, like Bill and Ted, you know, the guys from Wayne's World and stuff. All those characters work in isolation, and then when you put them in the real world, that's when you got to decide, do you want to, you know, watch this goofy movie where it's like, yeah, dude, this one, all you want to see is them act with other people. Like that scene at the dinner table when they obviously get presented with this amazing meal at this French estate, dive in, and one of the characters is like, hey, you can't do that. Where are your manners? He's like, oh, my bad. Tell me what to do. Yeah, like, it's just the wildest 180 from what you thought was going to happen. I couldn't wait to hear them say shit.
I wanted to specifically address that scene because that character who's been on screen for a while but hasn't said a thing, Agnes, who's played by Adele Echart Chopolis. I don't know if I'm saying it. I assume her name is Greek, but she was best known for being one of the leads in Blue is the Warmest Color, which was a pretty big breakout role for her. She finally speaks at the table and she starts screaming like this. And they're like, what the fuck? And like, oh, she had brain damage and she talks that way now. She can't help but yell. But as it goes along, it's clear that this brain damage also has any number of other really weird effects on her, and she's like really suspicious of them and wants to like detect that whatever secret they're hiding, which they are in fact hiding a secret, that they've got a giant fucking fly that they don't want anybody else to know about. I know some people suggested they found her kind of offensive, that like, I guess people with brain damage. Fair enough. I mean, there's a billion different effects that brain damage can have. This whole thing is so absurd. She's just another strange character in a movie filled with very strange characters.
I thought she was offensive until about maybe 5-10 minutes with her. Then I found her really endearing. And where she ends up by the end of it, which of course I'm not going to spoil, what she says to her friend, I thought that's really cool that she was self-aware of this thing everyone's annoyed about. And that's so nice. What a wonderful piece of character that is to just throw in there. And they're all like bigger than life characters, but they're so human. It's bizarre. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing, did you call it Rubber earlier? I'm going to get into looking into that.
His first film is a third person perspective of a tire possibly committing murder and being chased by the authorities.
Amazing.
I personally really recommend Deer Skin, which stars the lead from that movie, The Artist, John Dujardin, who plays a guy who just is totally obsessed with this deer skin jacket that he got. And he starts actually becoming a serial killer because he sees other people who have other things that would go really well with his deer skin jacket. Or they have a cool jacket and he doesn't want any competition.
Yeah.
He wants to have the coolest jacket in that town. So
I'd highly recommend anybody that got this or wants more, keep an eye out.
Yeah.
A lot of his movies are working, I think, on some level of it's a really long one-note joke. And part of the payoff is that he gets you far enough from how stupid the idea is that when he pulls out the tablecloth for the aha, you're like, yeah, that was funny.
Yeah, like in that one, it's like a pun that you're just waiting the whole movie for. I mean, even in Mandibles, there's points that you go, why is this called Mandibles? And by the time they finally show why it's called Mandibles, you don't even care about that being the title. It's such a totally arbitrary thing in some ways. But on the other hand, it is kind of the MacGuffin. So I don't know. I found this, like I do most of his films, really charming. I feel like as he's gone along, he has become gradually more accessible with his style of humor. I thought Rubber is way too abstract for most people, I think. And I think as he's gone along, he's sort of finessed and found out how to balance that perfect line where they're still totally just as surreal, but they're a little easier to follow. Maybe this is no exception. A lot of people, like we were saying, think this is his most accessible film. Maybe so. This or Keep an Eye Out, like 6 1/2 dozen or the other. But yeah, I would say this is a good starting point, probably, especially if you like the, oh, I love Dumb and Dumber. Well, this is kind of a French Dumb and Dumber on acid. So let's go to final thoughts. Bob, get us started.
I really dug it. You know, comedy isn't something I spend a lot of time looking for when I'm watching features, but this guy's just always going to be a go-to. Like I said, I'm not kidding when I said this guy's not really concerned about the conventions of regular filmmaking. You know, obviously the camera's still, you know, where it's supposed to be and stuff like that. But if you want to see something where you don't know what's going to happen and not in the suspense, oh my God, it's just at some point, all of the characters are kind of falling forward and it's hysterical. I think there is some meanness if you look at it a certain kind of way about how the characters and who did what and gets what and stuff like that. But I'm going to just put this out there that it's almost kind of like an amoral little weird slice of life. Like when we talked about all the stuff that happened at the beginning of the movie, we go from this guy gets a job to light years from there in less than 20 minutes. It's already a 3 different kinds of films and you don't know what's gonna happen. So I really dug it. I'm gonna give it 8 out of 10 neighbor dogs that become useful to the plot in a way I've never seen in a film. I loved it.
Brad.
I choose to watch this because it's a French film and I feel I could be deep, thought-provoking for a while. I had my fake cigarette out while watching.
Your candy cigarette?
C'est la vie, you know. Ding dang dong, sommelier la mattina. Yeah. Or however the song goes. It gets right into the heist. Like, there's going to be a car. You get the suitcase. Get it out of the car. I don't even remember how the heist went, but I thought, ah, yes, we're all just walking through life looking for suitcases for purpose. And then the guys are like, sure, okay. He doesn't even ask for further details, who to look out for, what type of crime he's about to commit. And I'm like, what is this? This guy's about to probably commit grand larceny. He's like, okay, that took me aback. And then the giant fly shows up and they're like, whoa, it's a giant fly. I'm like, what am I watching? My fake cigarette's gone completely at this point. I don't even remember pretending to smoke. But it slowly won me over on how absurd it was. Certain things happened late in the game where it would probably weird out a ton of people. I'll admit I did the, oh my gosh, during a third act sequence or reveal, as they call it. But I think a lot of people will enjoy this, even people who can't handle the pretentious nonsense I was doing earlier about, you don't like French films, you don't like life, you know, sort of nonsense. This is a lot of fun. This is hard to rate for me because I feel like, yeah, that was goofy, that was weird. But I feel like 3 years from now, I'll be at a bar when they're open again or a tavern and tell someone like, dude, I seen this one film where they find a giant fly. Hilarious. And I think it changed my life. So just based on that, I'm going to have to give this 7 manic, depressive, suspicious dinner table partners out of 10.
As much as I enjoyed this, I don't think it's one of my very favorites by Depew. I really did. And I'll watch this again. God, I wish they would just put out a box set of his stuff. It'd be terrific. I like the extra level of surrealism some of the other ones go to. And like I said, this is a little pulled back. Believe me, if you're a fan, it's not so much pulled back that you wouldn't know within 15 minutes, is this a Quentin Depew film? Because, you know, the fact is the man is a genre himself. As much as I can try and draw comparison to any other things, there's nobody else who's ever made films just like Quentin Depew makes them. They're his own thing, and you know when you see one, and Mandibles is definitely one of them. I liked it. If it is your thing and you haven't watched it yet, you're going to be so sad that you've been missing out on all this stuff, like Brad is right now. He's like, why didn't anyone tell me? It's like, well, you didn't want to get that secondhand candy cigarette smoke.
Yeah. I was the great Pagliacci.
I'm going to give this 7 out of 10 really overcooked pieces of meat. Yeah, the secrets are like cooked to the point of like charred. The guy literally tries to eat it. And he's like, oh, nah. I'm like, why would you even? Oh, because we're watching a character in a Quentin Depew film who might actually do something like that. And that's one of the less strange things his character does.